Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Is my brain working? Not really. We're talking about Anna Karenina Part 3, Chapter 15. I'm going to try to, but my brain is not working. It's late. It's 1 in the morning, 1 a.m., which is not super late for me. You guys know me to be up later than that. But I have been having not much sleep and early mornings for the last few days, so it feels late. My brain is just malfunctioning. Plus, I've been grinding it out all day, working, trying to get these books ready for Launchpad. That's the small business that I run. You guys probably all know about that. But in short, I've got about 500 or so short stories to edit and proofread and typeset into various anthologies to be printed, and I've just been smashing through that today. But yeah, my brain is ready to go to sleep. Swim said, the mama fishy said, interesting line from this chapter. Oh wait, by the way, part 3, chapter 15, questions I asked you guys. Anna is planning to do a runner. How will Karenin react to this? Did I already read that? Oh man, my brain's not working. This is one of those podcasts that I'm doing with 99% asleepness. Swim said, the mother fishy said, interesting line. She remembered that partly sincere but greatly exaggerated role of a mother living for her son, which she had assumed for the last 5 years. Whatever position she might accept, she could not give up her son. This line leads me to believe that she is not as devoted a mother as I thought, but certainly likes to be seen as one. So she mitigates her feelings of shame by continuing to show the world how devoted she still is to her son. I'm assuming her plan is to take her son and go to her brother's house in Moscow. Our fun-loving Steva will certainly love that. I think Steva will love that, won't he? Is Steva going to be able to help her with the divorce? Is that what's going to happen? Or help her with, you know, with the separation or with her situation? I am a Norwegian said, things are really starting to heat up. I don't think the law is on Anna's side here, but going to the law would expose Karenin to public shame, exactly what he wanted to avoid. He doesn't think much of his son anymore either. I'm not sure Karenin is going to do so much. A sister visiting her brother is perfectly acceptable from the outside, right? Oh my god. I'm yawning mid-podcast. That's not cool. Sorry. And Anna's... Wait. Oh, man. My brain's not working. Is Anna pregnant? Anna's pregnant, isn't she, at this point? I kind of forgot about that. Adds a little bit of complication. But her husband doesn't know she's pregnant yet. Is that right? He just knows that she's cheated. Did I just make that up? Did I make all that up? Did that not happen? I'm pretty sure that's what's happening. Oh my god. Okay, let's just read. You guys don't have to listen to me trying to string words together. Let me just read off a page. This is part 3, chapter 16. In all the rooms of the country house, porters, gardeners, and footmen went about carrying out the things. Cupboards and chests of drawers stood open. Twice the nearest shop had been sent to for balls of string. The floor was strewn with newspapers, two trunks, several bags, and some strapped-up rugs had been taken down to the hall. A closed carriage and two izvoshchiks were waiting at the front porch. Anna, who had forgotten her agitation while she was working, stood at a table in the sitting room packing her handbag when Anushka drew her attention to the noise of approaching carriage wheels. Anna looked out and saw Karenin's messenger in the porch ringing the bell. Go and see what it is, she said, and calmly prepared for anything. Sat down in an easy chair and folded her hands on her knees. A footman brought her a thick envelope addressed in her husband's handwriting. The messenger has been told to wait for an answer, he said. All right, she replied, and as soon as he had gone, she tore open the envelope with trembling fingers. A packet of new still unfolded notes in a paper band fell out. She unfolded the letter and read the end first. All necessary preparations shall be made for your return. I beg you will note that I attach importance to this request of mine, she read. Having glanced through it, she went back and read it again from the beginning. When she had finished, she felt cold and knew that a more dreadful misfortune had befallen her than she had ever expected. She had that morning repented of having told her husband and wished it were possible to unsay her words, and here was a letter treating her words as unsaid and giving her what she had desired. But now the letter appeared more terrible than anything she could have imagined. He is in the right. He is in the right, she muttered. Of course he always is in the right. He is a Christian. He is magnanimous. Yes, a mean, horrid man, and no one but I understands or will understand it, and I cannot explain it. They say he is a religious, moral, honest, and wise man, but they do not see what I have seen. They do not know how for 8 years he has been smothering my life, smothering everything that was alive in me, that he never once thought I was a live woman in need of love. They do not know how at every step he hurt me and remained self-satisfied. How have I not tried with all my might to find a purpose in my life? Have I not tried to love him, tried to love my son when I could no longer love my husband? But the time came when I understood that I could no longer deceive myself, that I am alive, and I cannot be blamed because God made me so, that I want to love and to live. And now, if he killed me, if he had killed him, I would have borne anything. I would have forgiven anything, but no, how was it? I did not guess what he would do. He will do what is consistent with his low nature. He will be in the right, but as for me, who I'm already disgraced, he will disgrace me more and more. You can yourself foresee what awaits you and your son, she repeated the words from the letter. That is a threat that he will take my son from me, and probably their stupid laws will permit it. But don't I know why he said it? He does not believe in my love for my son, or he despises it. He always did snigger at it. He despises the feeling of mine, but he knows that I will not give up my son, and that I cannot give him up, that without my son I cannot live even with the man I love. That I forsook my son, I should act like a horrid, disreputable woman. He knows that, and knows that I have not the power to do it. Our life must go on as heretofore. She recalled another sentence of the letter. That life was painful before. Lately it had been dreadful. What will it be now? And he knows it all, knows that I cannot repent of breathing, of loving, knowing that nothing but lies and deception can come of this arrangement. But he wants to continue to torture me. I know him. I know that he swims and delights in falsehood as a fish does in water. But no, I will not give him that pleasure. Come what will, I will break this web of lies in which he wishes to entangle me. Anything is better than lies and deception. But how? Oh God, what was a woman ever as unhappy as I am? No, I shall break it off, break it off, she exclaimed, jumping up and forcing back her tears. And she went to the table to write him another note, though she knew in the depths of her soul that she would not have the strength to break anything off, nor to escape from her former position, however false and dishonest it might be. She sat down at her writing table, but instead of writing, she folded her arms on the table and put her head on them and began to cry, sobbing with her whole bosom heaving as a child cries. She wept because the hopes of clearing up and defining her position were destroyed forever. She knew before that everything would remain as it was and would be even far worse than before. She felt that, insignificant as it had appeared that morning, the position she held in society was dear to her, and that she would not have the strength to change it for the degraded position of a woman who had forsaken husband and child, and formed a union with her lover that, however much she tried, she could not become stronger than herself. She would never be able to feel the freedom of love, but would always be a guilty woman, continually threatened with exposure, deceiving her husband for the sake of a shameful union with a man who was a stranger and independent of her, and with whom she could not live a united life. She knew that it would be so, and yet it was so terrible that she could not even imagine how it would end. And she cried without restraint, like a punished child. The approaching step of the footman recalled her to herself, and hiding her face from him, she pretended to be writing. "The messenger is asking for the answer," he said. "The answer, yes, let him wait, I'll ring," said Anna. "What can I write?" she thought. "What can I decide alone? What do I know? What do I want? That I am in love?" And she felt again a schism in her soul, and again was frightened by the feeling, so she seized the first pretext for her action that occurred to her to divert her thoughts from herself. "I must see Alexis." As she called Vronsky in her thoughts, "He alone can tell me what to do. I shall go to Betsy's and perhaps shall meet him there." Quite forgetting that the evening before, when she had told him she was not going to the Princess Tvetskaya's, he had replied that in that case he would not go either, she wrote to her husband, "I have received your letter. A." Rang and gave the note to the footman. "We are not going," she said to Anushka, who had just come in. "Not going at all?" "No, but don't unpack till tomorrow, and let the carriage wait. I am going to see the princess. What dress shall I put out?" All right, there we go, another chapter down. What will Anna do now? Have your say over on the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate it. Have a wonderful existence, and I will see you tomorrow.